right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, June 12th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is a balmy 76 degrees and very sunny here in upstate New York. And as a matter of fact, yesterday afternoon, I saw that we had our hottest day yet this year. We broke 96.1 degrees officially at the Rochester International Airport. That's very warm for the beginning or middle of June in New York State. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Emotion Detectors, Matrix Simulations, Self-Learning AI, and Assimilation. And I think we're going to continue down this vein. I actually came out here this morning, and not only was my browser again completely crashed, and I had to try and rebuild all the links from where we left off, but also I apparently am logged out of chat, and I didn't realize until about 10 seconds before the music ended. So I'm not in chat right now. But so I want to continue on for where we left off on Friday. We looked at artificial intelligence being able to detect micro expressions in your face, and then by comparing them to a database, remember they have their robot googly eyes now with cameras, they are able to determine potentially what your emotions are, whether you're happy or sad, maybe even in the not too distant future, coupled with things such as our voice patterns, they'll be able to determine whether or not you should be considered dangerous, whether or not you are having a mental crisis. And that's something else. Don't forget Tommy Insel. He's been very quiet. Notice we haven't seen a lot of news out of that, though. In this show, we've covered it a lot. Just because I do believe it is extremely important, considering that we also saw Section 399S in that neurological National Neurological Surveillance of Mental Diseases in that 21st Century Cures Act. It tells me that they are making a move. We've read about living therapeutics. We did a couple whole weeks on bacteria, gut bacteria, microbiome. I mean, we've spent quite a while on this show really kind of looking into how those things work and how they can interact within the body and especially with the brain, with being able to manipulate brain chemicals. But you start to see a picture that is being painted that, I hate to say it, but it can't be denied anymore. This is not tinfoil hat stuff. You know, I mentioned on Friday I've been watching that TV show from about a decade ago, which it is. I think it was like 2008, I remember. So I mean, it's 2017 now, if you can even believe that it was already almost a decade. But I just started watching. I made it through season one. I started season two. And it's like to me, it's really been affecting me because we read about this stuff every day and we have for at least 5, maybe 6 or 7 years now under the title of WTF. That's kind of how this all started. But the WTF started to become like things that really were going on. It wasn't like silly stories with people doing dumb things. This was serious research that we hadn't potentially known about, at least in our faces, in the past. Maybe there had always been, you know, conspiracy theories. And I think that's why this whole fake news thing is really kind of spinning up right now, because they don't want people to know what the real reality is and what the real truth is or who to believe. What is good or what is bad. I mean, they've really literally mixed up everything, turned the world on its head, like we had predicted. And that's where we're at right now. Now this technology is going to come in and be the grand savior for many different perspectives. It's not just going to be to cure your cancer, which is where they started, and where we had even postulated would be a good place to start. But they're also going to come in on how to run your business and how to determine whether or not your lineage might have some genetic issues that it should be aware of that maybe they can cure, known or unknown. If we have some sort of 21st century warfare, like I said, I think nukes are kind of old school. I really think that some of this mad science, since they've democratized it all across the planet, and things are freely available all over for access, including how to make more virulent pathogens for things such as bird flu. I mean, that was well documented. There was a big fight about that in the scientific community as to whether or not they should be publishing the genome and the research that they had done, and taking that 1918, actually I think it was the 1918 flu they did first, and see if they could make that more virulent. But then they started messing around with the bird flu, and I think they published that not once but twice. Two different ways they could tinker with it. You know, and we read about the ending of the biowarfare and chemical warfare programs, that inking by Nixon of that, I don't know. I never, ever, ever remember what it's called. Maybe it's the Geneva Convention, or maybe that's for torture, but it's for one of them. But we inked that. It was ratified, it was written in 69. It was ratified in 72. We had maintained that we will continue with our research all in the name of a defensive posture. But what they've been able to do, we found out in 1982, the article out of the New York Times, and I shouldn't even be mentioning all this because it's going to take me forever to do these notes again. But I'm trying to lay the groundwork here as to why I started watching this show, Fringe. Like I said, Friday, I never watched it when it was out, but I'm catching up now. And many listeners have messaged me over the years saying, hey, you should watch this show called Fringe. And I never was able to find the time. Well, I have to tell you, it is putting a face, characters, images, and a lot of these technologies that we are talking about now onto the big stage, and is playing it out without even the need of my imagination anymore. Because these shows, at least for the first part of the season, looking at the biowarfare, were so realistic. It's exactly what we've been talking about. Typhoid Marys and The Stand, Stephen King. Outbreak, you know, things like that. Something gets out or somebody puts it out there. It really, really put the fear of apocalypse like in my eyeballs. And I think that's the difference, because once you see it, you can't unsee it. And when we read this stuff every day and we connect these dots, you know, I do these notes then, and then I cut the shows for the afternoon or for the next day or whatever I got to get done that day. And then I go upstairs and I do the other half of my life, and that is, you know, start making dinner, helping with homework, doing all the crap that you got to do. And I kind of forget about it. I go to normalcy for the second half of my day. And then I come back, usually at night. There's more live shows. And then I go to bed. But you know what? By the time I go to bed, I'm so exhausted that I am just black. My brain is black. I dream nothing. I see nothing. Didn't always work out that way. But I think maybe I trained my brain not to see it things. You know, I used to have these nightmares, just nightmares, nightmares. I don't have them anymore. Well, the show, like, put these images in my eyes now. So now I'm dreaming. But what's happening is it's not the show that's playing through my mind. It's my brain now going, ooh, ooh, taking all these little components of all these stories, of all these crazy things that we've covered, and going, and now it's making little movies of them. It's like my brain learned how to dream again about horrible things. And I don't know. I mean, it's addicting, because I really want to see what's next. I mean, it's gotten kind of very X-Files now with these weird creatures and things. But the X-Files never really talked about, on the surface, genetic engineering. But at the very end of that series, I remember there was the greenhouse in way out in the middle of nowhere with the corn crops and the bees. And, you know, back in, I don't know, that was the 90s, maybe the very early thousands, back when that series ended, that meant nothing to me. I was like, but, you know, if you think back now on that show, there were all kinds of weird little creatures. You never knew where they came from. You always assumed they were aliens. But, of course, that's how they always try to. I think, actually, I read that that was a PSYOP in the 50s where when they first tried to make Roswell a quote-unquote UFO crash, which, again, we've talked about this at length, about Antarctica and the Nazis and some of their programs that they had going on. And I mean, I know of things that definitely convince me that there's some validity to that theory of mine. But there was a PSYOP utilizing aliens to discredit people who came out and said that they saw something. And if you go back through even like some of the traditional UFO settings, you know, Jimmy Carter, love him or hate him, still, you know, people say he was a sucky president. I have to say at least one thing about Jimmy Carter is that his heart's always been in the right place. I mean, the guy, I don't think has a mean bone in his body. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, but Jimmy Carter has always come off to me as someone who is a real, like, to the core humanitarian. He still does that Habitat for Humanity, building homes and stuff. And I don't think that I've ever seen anything saying that Jimmy Carter funneled funds or played nepotism or anything like that. But how did I get? Oh, Jimmy Carter even filed a report of something that he saw one time. I don't know, one of the books I had years ago about, I think it was Project Blue Book, maybe, or one of them that talked about that. It had mentioned and had a copy of Jimmy Carter's sighting there, but I didn't want to get off topic. I don't even know where I'm going, but we'll get back to the presidency. Maybe if I can get through these tabs today. Back to this discreditization, though. So what they've done, the X-Files with some of those creatures, I'm almost thinking now they were referring to genetic modification and some of these splicing and dicing of the different animal and insect and plant kingdoms to create these organisms in dark labs down long dark hallways with bloody handprints and screams. I say that sometimes in jest, but you know that stuff like that is going on. Who's going to stop it? Especially if it's in some underground facility or government-run project. Who would know? And that's one of the interesting things in this fringe. The doctor I mentioned had been doing experiments working with DARPA. They actually mentioned DARPA in one of the very first show episodes. And then he went a little crazy. But then they pulled him out of the institution to help them decode some of these freaky things that they're seeing happening, these attacks and deaths and things that are beyond quote-unquote science. And it ends up that, like, all these projects this guy had worked on, oh yeah, they got funding for this and they got funding for that, and oh, they, you know, were working on this crazy stuff. But I really think that stuff like that is going on, and we see that playing out now a decade later. It's actually in the news if you know where to look for it. And we see millions of dollars, different universities and different corporations. They've opened it up now to the public realm. You don't even need to be a federal contractor now. If you got a technology, they'll take a look at it and give you funding to develop it if it's in the name of keeping us safe. Well, along the lines, biotechnology, we have also found out, though, that there is a direct connect to the brain. There is, in conjunction with a lot of this brain research, the Brain Initiative, on the name of curing PTSD and the epidemic of dementia-esque diseases, as well as autism, Parkinson's, PTSD, depression. They're going to find ways to fix us. And Georgie Porgie Church, he's that one running thread that connects DARPA, connects genetic engineering, connects bringing back species, bringing things back from the dead, connects the Apollo project of the brain, working with the intelligence agencies to barcode neurons. and reverse engineer the brain to come up with more powerful algorithms to help them decode more things. And we had read, when we started coupling this with some of these facial recognition programs and emotional detection type technologies, they also can read your intentions through your gait and how you walk, as well as your personality, potentially. Once you have enough data, you can determine anything by comparing and contrasting. They have the DNA database as well, and now they're getting into medical technologies that they're turning into these little genetically modified bacteria, programming them just like little machines to deliver payloads or develop pharmaceuticals inside of you. You know, I really didn't want to touch this, but we found out now too that they are using AI to develop better drugs and to find sequences and off targets that potentially they weren't aware of, and that their puny human little brains couldn't cope with the largeness of the data set. But as they are collecting, and everyone asked before why they were collecting so much data, what are they ever going to do with it? We found out the other day too, it was going to require petabytes of data over short intervals, and Amazon stepped right up to help IARPA and Georgia Porgy Church store all this neurological information in the cloud. We already know that Jeff Bezos had already been in a partnership with the CIA at the request of the CIA to build them a parallel Amazon cloud. Well, wait till you hear this. So all this is going on. I ran across a story on Friday after the show when I was doing the notes. This is a PDF from the CDC's own website. We've talked about some of this pandemic stuff. Again, Fringe has been putting this right into the forefront and making me start percolating the information that we've discovered into like real-time data points of things that I've been thinking of. And here we go. Here's one of them. CDC.gov, public health surveillance and informatics program office. They are now proposing this. They are calling it the Division of Behavioral Surveillance, monitoring behavioral and mental health to improve public health. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Division of Behavioral Surveillance designs, manages state-of-the-art state and local surveillance activities that provide integrated disease, risk behavior, and health information to state and local public health authorities and CDC programs. Now, guys, this is going to be the culmination of your electronic medical health records, your risk behavior, behavioral monitoring, and what types of diseases are spreading within a locality. They probably have biosensors of some kind in each of the major cities. I would think then that they are also monitoring through your doctor's office if they see an uptick of a potential pathogen. It is probably reported real time. For example, they plan to coordinate and implement activities related to the behavioral risk factor surveillance system, or the BRFSS for short, the nation's premier system of telephone health surveys that collect state and local data on health-related behaviors and chronic conditions of Americans. Oh, look out. They're going to be calling you. The DBS, for short, also conducts other specialized surveys to support CDC programs and obtain data on important emerging health issues such as, ding-a-ling, influenza and mental health. Federal, state, and local governments will use this information to develop and evaluate programs, policies, and legislation to improve public health and track progress toward achieving public health goals. Now, would that be that vaccination program? Wasn't there a child health vaccination program they were rolling out? Healthy Americans 2020 or something like that, where they were going to have this massive vaccine schedule and really push at getting everybody vaccinated. So they're trying to understand who is and who isn't and who they need to target. The CDC's Division of Behavioral Surveillance designs and manages. Now, guys, this is right off their website. Designs and manages state and local surveillance activities that provide integrated disease, risk, behavior, and health information to state and local public health authorities and CDC programs. It works collaboratively with state and territorial health departments to provide assistance in survey operations and to ensure standardized high-quality data. What does that mean? They're going to come to your door? I don't know. This really scared me. To develop metropolitan statistical area estimates, which allow for health tracking on an MSA level, which is their management software. 3, assess states' epidemiologists' mental health and disaster response surveillance priorities and needs. So they're going to be taking a look at all of the mental health and disaster response surveillance. So this is great. Yeah, this is really making me paint a rosy picture of the future. And this is from the CDC, guys. I'm telling you, I think they are lining this up. This is really frightening me. Support and enhance analysis of the data from these specialized surveys. Disseminate this data widely by promoting the broad use and application of the database and support developmental and standardized validated state and local specialized surveys. They also will work collectively with many other CDC programs and federal agencies, such as the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, to develop special reports, such as the Annual Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, Mental Health Surveillance Summary. They're also going to help integrate surveillance across federal and state agencies, support and enhance the use of a database surveillance system, and develop and implement standardized and validated state and local specialized responses, and for focused initiatives such as the Communities Putting Prevention to Work Project, a locally driven American Recovery and Investment Act initiative that assists the public health response to obesity and tobacco use in 50 different communities. The database and the CDC's Public Health Surveillance and Informatics Program Office, and then in parentheses, proposed. Suppose the Office of Surveillance, Epidemiology, and Laboratory Services. The Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System is a state-based system of telephone health surveys that collect information on health risk behaviors, chronic conditions, healthcare access, healthcare practices, and measures of healthy primarily related to chronic disease and injury. It is conducted monthly in every state, as well as the District of Columbia and 6 U.S. territories, and it provides a state-based prevalence data on key health behaviors. For many states, it is the only source of state-based health data. It is working with countries around the globe, including what? Brazil. Remember I told you something happened in Brazil? I also found, and I mentioned the other day, Oxitec built a mosquito factory in Brazil. But they are also working with countries such as China. Oh, no. Guess where else there is a GMO mosquito factory built? Yes, in China. They are working as well with Jordan. Put a big question mark after that one. Nations in the Caribbean, oh wait, like Cayman Islands, who also released Oxitec genetically modified mosquitoes, Italy, Vietnam, and Korea. Of course, South Korea is one of our mad science offshore countries to help them establish and maintain standardized and validated community level surveillance systems. Guys, I know at least for some of these areas, there is a lot of biotechnology going on behind the covers. So this is really scary. Our CDC is working with all of our secret labs. So maybe that's a good list right there. We should look into it. Brazil, China, Jordan, nations in the Caribbean. And one was Cayman Islands, but there was a second one that they were trying to release those mosquitoes in. And I think they fought back. I don't know about Italy. Italy had, oh, we had read about that. Italy had some Ebola guys that supposedly got out and went to Italy. I remember that. And then there was a death or two maybe, and then you never heard another thing. Vietnam, well, Vietnam, we know DARPA was there back in the 60s. We found that out from the Annie Jacobson interview. And Korea, of course, has been a military institution for a very long time. We know when we read about that Army, Army, Navy, DOD, and the anthrax, the 575 samples that weren't properly killed and shipped all over the planet for, quote unquote, defensive research purposes. There had been some sent to Korea, South Korea, and that caused a bit of a stir. So I would say there's a pretty safe bet that the CDC is sharing information with all of our other mad science labs to see how well, wink, their experiments are working. I mean, that's what I can take away, science fiction or not. I think sometimes science fiction is a little closer to truth than we'd like to believe. And, if the ethical landscape that I see out there is even close to what we know it is, then we should be afraid. We do know that this stuff is going on. And it's frightening, the levels that they have taken us to. Remember, it's always a double-edged sword. So they can say that they can cure all disease all they want, but it means they also can kill in 10,000 wondrous ways with the same technologies. Anyway, they also not only are working with all these mad science labs in offshore countries, but they have some sort of Gulf State population survey. I'm sure that is because of the mosquitoes. And that was developed and conducted to provide state health and mental health departments, because of all the hurricane-related mental health disaster problems, I am sure, and other organizations with information concerning the mental and behavioral health status of the Gulf Coast population most directly affected by what? The 2010 Deepwater Horizon BP oil spill. How interesting is that? The mental health. Yeah, they lost fishing opportunities. But remember, there was a lot of strange rumor. It was the DOE was involved, and Hal Burton as well. And good old Dickie Cheney. And there had been maybe rumors, substantiated or not. There were microbes that there were a few stories that I had read when it talks about these microbes. Oh, look, they occur naturally in nature, but who knows what they did to them beforehand. We found out the DOE is kind of like that rotten cherry on top of a lot of this biological engineering in the lab. You know, they work on a lot of biofuels and things of that nature. Even Doctor Who. I was really surprised. But I'll tell you what, my kid watches Doctor Who with me, and she totally got it when she saw that. And like I said, once you see it, you can't unsee it. I do believe in pre-programming. You know, that's a lot of playing mind games as well. So once they pre-program it, once you see it, it's become kind of normalized. You've already gotten a dose. It's kind of like inoculating your brain to potential futures. So you don't freak out. You just kind of go, oh, yeah, I saw that once. Your brain recognizes a pattern and at least has a filing card in the filing cabinet we call a brain. Remember, that's exactly how they are teaching AI to learn. They are using virtual reality. We discovered Google, Elon Musk, DARPA. They are creating these self-learning systems that play through potential realities as a virtualistic 3D world. And they, once they see it, once they see how variables interact and work together, then they understand it. And if they see it again, they go, oh, yeah, I remember that. See, guys, all of this is connected. As they start decoding the mysteries of how all these biological components work, we talked about this a long time ago. They started trying to create robots in the very beginning as an example, and organisms in the very beginning from scratch. But they determined that over millions of years of evolution or more, depending on what you believe, nature, quote unquote, and I'll put a big N on that because nature is the big N. We always forget that. But what we have here is this miracle. I don't want to get all like religious sounding, but I tend to believe that there is a lot of really miraculous intelligence that is behind what we call nature with a capital N. And that encompasses all of life. That encompasses our blue dot is a living organism. We are cancer cells, humanity, and its lack of morals and ethics, its lack of empathy is what makes us a disease. And it's really a horrifying thought because not only are we a disease against the planet, we are a disease against our own. We will do unthinkable things in order to not only survive, but it's almost like that survival instinct got broken. Survive and usurp and control everything. It is the definition of psychopathy. And this whole narcissistic disorder and this whole instant gratification society that we have built, it is the reaching for the ultimate power of creation and destruction. And they want to control it all. The next step, of course, is to control the mind, is to control the body, is to control the microbes, which we found out there are thousands of times, if not millions of times, more microbes on this planet than there are human mammalian cells. And once they can take over all the life forms. And, you know, I started thinking about this morning as well, between the mosquitoes. Because mosquitoes are an important component. They're small, but, you know, they're not insignificant. Mosquitoes are a bottom feeder of the food chain. A lot of insects. I don't know dragonflies. I've watched dragonflies eat before. I saw a miraculous display one time of like, I don't know, there were probably eight different dragonflies. And it was right about dusk. It was a warm summer evening. Beautiful, perfect blue sky. with a sunset, and you could see, as you were looking up at the blue sky, you could see these little insects flying around, and then you'd see these dragonflies swoop down, and they'd catch them in their feet, and then you'd see them, like, suck the blood out of them, or whatever it was, the bug juice, and then they'd drop the little carcass. It was really amazing. But we saw the other day that they have now created a cyborg dragonfly. I saw a dragonfly the other day in my little greenhouse I have out back. And I got up close and took a good look at him because it was an unusual looking dragonfly. Had all black wings, black body, and it had right on the top quadrant of each of its wings, inside and out, was a little kind of yellowish dot, like you'd see on a butterfly, a colored dot. Its wings were black, its body was black, and it had this yellow little round dot right at the top of its wings. And I was like, And I mean, you know, you start to think, oh my God, am I going crazy? But, you know, after we read stories, I mean, this is like published research that they are doing right now and things that they are developing. And then, you know, you start looking around in your natural world. They are messing around with all of the creatures. The DARPA lady said it a long time ago. They're going to terraform other planets. That is the plan. Remember, DARPA is the dark side to NASA. During Sputnik, they actually started out as quote-unquote NASA. Then they needed something to focus on. Exclusive space race. So they spun that off. But on the backside, a lot of this mad science, we found out that Elon Musk was carrying up MRSA, antibiotic-resistant MRSA, to the space station to do experiments for some, I think it was a UK company we discovered. It wasn't even DOD. It was a company or a university, Cambridge maybe, one of them. I don't remember the name. I'll find it for the notes. But it was some company that was sending this antibiotic-resistant MRSA up to the space station to see how much more virulent, again, they could make it to then get a leg up on the mutation happening on Earth to be able to respond in the event of some sort of biological emergency. So let's get back and finish this so we could then get through the rest of these stories. So we were reading a PDF, a slick, a cell sheet, as we would call it in the tech industry, on this new proposed division of behavioral surveillance from the CDC to not only encompass mental health during disasters, but also to include addiction and mental health practices and surveillance through phone surveys. Some of their future plans, and I will guarantee you on the back end, there's going to be a big fat pulsating brain somewhere. The division key activities will be to coordinate and support current field operations to provide high quality data to state officials and other users, what, like Tommy Insel of Google for $29.99 a month. They're turning our data into commodity. Also, by exploring newer state and local survey methods, such as cell phones and web-based surveys. They will also provide analyzing and interpreting mental health data from GSPS, what is that, some sort of global positioning system? I don't know. GSPS, they did not give an explanation for that acronym, as well as support communities putting prevention to work with a project providing data to evaluate intervention. The division accomplishments include initiated, designed, and completed the Gulf State Population Survey, which monitored the mental and behavioral health of the population affected by the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil rig explosion. That's really suspicious. That's really strange. The GSPS is the first CDC telephone survey to monitor the mental health status and potential stress-associated physical health following a disaster. It can be used as a model for other disaster mental health surveys. Well, how about like disaster help, not mental health surveys? They also collected 40,000 interviews during their 12-month data collection. CDC experts to release the survey results in a joint report with SAMHSA, and this was in 2012. They provided leadership also in developing the CDC report Mental Illness Surveillance Among Adults in the United States, released on September 2nd, 2011, as a supplement to the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. So what are their future plans? Well, they plan to include working closely with state and federal partners to ensure that the database continues to provide data that is useful for public health research and practice for the state and local health policy decisions. They are going to test and implement the use of multimodal data collection as a cell phone and web-based and mail surveys and measure important emerging health issues such as access to care, preventative services, and mental health. They're making a play for your mental health. They are making a play for your brain. And I know this sounds like just phone surveys, but again, remember that the back end is going to be some sort of dystopian machine that is trying to determine what your emotional state is. And it's not just going to be through telephone surveys. Those telephone surveys will probably be doing things like listening to the sound of your voice. Yeah, that would be a sneaky way, wouldn't it? Hang up, hang up. As soon as I hear that it's some sort of like telemarketer, I hang up. So, all right. I've gotten so off track that it's not even funny. So let's go here. We ended a show yesterday or the day before about some new dystopian device that is coming out of ScienceAlert.com, May 29, 2017. This dystopian device warns you when AI is trying to impersonate actual humans. And you know, maybe we should look this up really quick. Let's look up AI and call center. This would be neat to see. The human AI customer service layer. This is some sort of layer that you can add to your contact center to empower customer service excellence. The human AI customer service. You know, I mean, guys, web-based applications, this is what they're going to do. You know, they're touting this to like travel agencies and things of that nature. But, you know, as they start getting good at reacting to things that we ask, learning to do things such as quote-unquote translation. Remember, that's something that the deep learning brain project at Google was doing. Natural language translation. Microsoft was also in on the game. And a lot of that technology has been for voice recognition, to be able to enable these technologies that not only learn capabilities and inflections, but also how to reproduce human voice. You know, that whole voice medicine stuff that we had talked about a long time ago. There really is some science to that. And they have been rolling out some different diagnostics that will allow them to diagnose disease from many different facets, mental health being one of them. So it's got to make you wonder. We've seen in multiple different locations now about this quote unquote mental health surveillance. And as we see fake news, they use this whole inability to determine truth as a way to potentially sell AI to the masses. You know, call centers to be able to answer information, whether it is through a simulated voice, and they have stuff like that already. They call it like an expert type system where you have the computer. I mean, you could even do it with directory trees and just pushing numbers or doing the voice response. But they've gotten pretty good at that now. But also with any type of data input, anything you input to the machine is learning from you. It's learning about the human condition. They are teaching machines to mimic human emotion and be able to respond to us, to be able to determine whether or not you're telling the truth. We have DARPA putting out RFPs looking for low-cost EEGs for schools and homes to be able to help understand, you know, how they learn. And it could be some sort of emergency thing for your doctor to be paying attention. Make sure you're feeling okay, Jenny. We'll have to give you some of your living therapeutics that'll boost your serotonin and dopamine levels and make you feel better. I mean, we know that that stuff is already in development. But you have things then. You have these companies, these corporations, not just federal agencies and local and state health officials monitoring mental health. But we also have places such as Facebook and Google. We did a story about Google wanting to monitor your mental health with people such as Tommy Insel. They want to read your emotions through your smart apps. We should be afraid, because all that data gets fed to a very large, very smart back-end algorithm that is sorting through that data to determine a profile on you. Now, we ended, I think, near the end of the show yesterday about these new chatbots, and I saw a chat was talking about that Microsoft Tay that went all Nazi sex fiend when they launched her on the internet. Well, yes, there is a new one. This was from May 5th, 2017, out of The Guardian. Human-robot interactions take a step forward with an emotional chatbot. Researchers describe the emotional chatting machine as a first attempt at the problem of creating machines that can fully understand user emotion. An emotional chatting machine has been developed by scientists, signaling the approach of an era in which human-robot interactions are seamless and go beyond the purely functional. The chatbot, developed again by Chinese, is seen as a significant step toward the goal of developing emotionally sophisticated robots. The ECM, as it is known for short, was able to produce a factually coherent answer while being questioned and imbuing its conversation with emotions such as happiness, sadness, or disgust. Professor Bjorn Schuller, a computer scientist at Imperial College London, who was not involved in the latest advances, described the work as an important step, quote unquote. When we read this Friday, I pointed out this is going to be one of those moments in history of the advancement of AI that it's going to just go away with a whimper. Nobody noticed, but even a scientist at Imperial College London, where a lot of this mad science is going on as well, calls this an important step towards personal assistants that could read the emotional undercurrent of a conversation and respond with something akin to something that we lack as a species: empathy. How scary is that? So let's create a robot to have empathy. And we are a species that lacks empathy. So if someday we've postulated this, if someday AI were to determine that we were a scourge to the planet because we as a species lacked empathy, they might have to eliminate us. I mean, I don't know. Just saying, I could see the logic behind it. And some smarty pants have actually warned about that. Elon Musk had talked about super intelligent species keeping us as pets. And that wouldn't be all of us. It would just be the ones that they determine would be subservient and worth something. This next generation of intelligence to be met in daily experience sooner rather than later, says Professor Bjorn Schuller. The paper found that 61% of humans who tested this new machine favored the emotional versions of the machine to the neutral chatbot. Now, remember, we read stories about that a long time ago, too, about how to get us to embrace the machine. And that would be to anthropomorphize it, to make it more human, so we would forget that it were a machine. Similar results have been found in the so-called Wizard of Oz studies, in which a human typing responses masquerades as an advanced AI. It is not a question whether they are desirable. They clearly are. Yeah, I hear the mad scientists rubbing their hands together and raising an eyebrow in that statement. But in which applications they make sense and where they don't. Min-Ling Heng, a computer scientist at Tsinghua University, Beijing, and co-author, said, "We are still far away from a machine that can fully understand the user's emotions." Well, whew. And this is just the first attempt at this problem. Like I've said, this is only the beginning. Huang and colleagues started by creating an emotion classifying algorithm. Ding! Made a database with an algorithm that could then splice and dice the data. And then that learned to detect emotion from 23,000 posts taking from Chinese social media. Well, that makes sense now. Because I've just been reading about some sort of new Chinese surveillance pre-crime system that they were developing. And how interesting would that be that at the university they are using social media to detect emotions just like they are doing on Facebook. There's all kinds of sociological experiments going on there. The posts have been manually classified by humans as sad, happy, and so on. And the emotion classifier was then used to tag millions of social media interactions according to emotional content. That's what the little smiley face and angry face and happy face, sad face. I don't know. There's all kinds of them. Thumbs up, thumb down on Facebook is all about. This is just automating it. They don't need a human now. You're just doing it for them. The emotion classifier was then used to tag millions of social media interactions according to the emotional content. And this huge data set then served as a training ground for the chatbot to learn both how to answer questions and how to express emotion. Look, we're feeding the machine, guys. We're feeding the machine. The resulting program could be switched into five possible modes. Happy mode, sad mode, angry mode, disgusted mode, and like mode, depending on the user's preferences. And in one example conversation, a user typed in, "Worst day ever. I arrived late because of the traffic." In neutral mode, the chatbot droned, "You were late." Alternative responses were, in disgust mode, "Sometimes life sucks." In like mode, "I am always here to support you." In happy mode, "Keep smiling, things will get better." And some people even said it was annoyingly chipper. That would be the annoying mode for sure. In the future, the team predicts the software will also learn the appropriate emotion to express at a given time. It could be almost empathetic, says Huang, adding that a challenge would be to avoid the chatbot reinforcing negative feelings such as rage, yes, or Hitler Nazi, like day. Until recently, chatbots were regarded as a sideshow to a more serious attempt at tackling machine intelligence. A chatbot known as Eugene Goldstein managed to convince some judges that it was talking to a human, but only by posing as a 13-year-old Ukrainian boy with a limited grasp of English. Well, that was kind of an odd one as well. Microsoft's disastrous chatbot was supposed to learn to chat from Twitter interactions, but it was terminated after becoming a genocide-supporting Nazi in less than 24 hours after being let loose on the internet. And a sex fiend. The latest studies show that chatbots driven by machine learning are starting to make significant headway. And this is where we should be concerned. Sandra Watcher, a computer scientist at the Oxford Institute, says that in the future, such algorithms are likely to be personalized. Some of you prefer a tough love pep talk. Hey, if you had to give me a brand, that would be me. Tough love pep talk. But others prefer to rant. And humans often struggle with the appropriate responses because of the complexity of emotions. So building technologies that could decipher accurate emotions would be very impressive. So guys, that's where this little secret device that we started reading a few times warns you when AI is trying to impersonate humans comes in. It's called the anti-AI. And it's being developed in Australia. It's worn behind your ear. And it will give you a literal chill down your spine when it detects speech patterns that aren't necessarily human. All right, guys. Well, here's the story we are going to kick off with tomorrow. AI with human-level intelligence will be walking the streets by 2040. This is out of futurism.com, and it was written April 29th, 2017. According to expert Ben Ross, human-level AI is something that we will see in our lifetime, and we better be prepared for it. Whether it'll be a force of good or destruction is actually in our hands. All right, guys, make sure you stick around because it is Monday. Lonnie Clark, live up next. All kinds of great radio that you probably missed this weekend, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody, take care.
Ozzy Skateboard, and you're listening to UCY.TV.